Right now, the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast is happening for you. A Medicare tearjerker, if there ever was one. His godfather in Oklahoma fixed the knees of Gail Sayers, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hey, welcome to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Drew McMillan told you, but I'm going to repeat it. I am a Medicare expert, and I am going to be your Medicare expert. Lucky, lucky you. This is Doug Jones, just happy as a clam. Do clams actually enjoy happiness? I don't know what clam moods are like, but anyway, if there were a clam, and if a clam could be happy, then I would be that clam. I would be so pleased to have you joining us for today's episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast as a way to help people facing Medicare overcome their trepidations and become a little more comfortable, a little more less fearful of Medicare. We express it in song by playing a 30-second radio spot that we have played on Phoenix radio stations. I'm going to ask Randy to push the button to play that spot right now.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Thank you, Randy. That was apropos. And the explanation is that there are lazy people all over the place. They're not really lazy, though. They just don't want to have to do the work of learning about Medicare, but they know it's necessary. So what we do is we help people feel more comfortable with the acquisition of Medicare knowledge and with the eventual decision process that they have to face. But once they've chosen the two parts of Medicare, A and B, once they've chosen a Medicare supplement, and once they've chosen a drug plan, our work is done, and we typically never have any reason to podcast to them again. They go off on their way, and God knows what happens. I'd like to think that they're with my old pets frolicking in a farm somewhere out in the country, and never to be seen again, but yet I know they're always happy wherever they are. So, with that, let me introduce the man who pushed the button that played the 30-second radio spot, Randy Carson. How you doing today, Randy?
Mr. Jones, you're looking particularly chipper today. How you doing?
Well, that's if you don't look at my missing tooth.
There is that part.
Went to the steakhouse and stayed there.
I hate when that happens. Oh, my goodness. But so I've got to ask. You led me right into this question. Was the steak really that tough? Or
no, the steak
could you
was
have thick. Been in Nebraska? You know, Nebraska's got the good beef.
This was excellent beef. I've always loved this steakhouse. It's called St. Charles Place. And they don't make me wear a mask when I go in there. It's just a fantastic place. But their steak has always been fantastic, but they used to have twice-baked potatoes. I love a good twice-baked potato, and I hate a bad twice-baked potato. So maybe 5 years ago, they just said, we're taking them off the menu. It used to be a different chef that made them, and he's gone now, so blah, blah, blah. And the other night, we were there because we were evicted because the people that want to buy our house insisted upon coming over to see the house again in the darkness. They wouldn't know what it looks like in the dark.
So does your house look a lot different in the dark?
I said, close your eyes and stay home, and it'll look just like our house looks in the dark. So, no, that wasn't good enough for them. So we had to evict ourselves, and I was over there, and I said, you know, if we were to order steak dinners, you wouldn't happen to have twice-baked potatoes on the menu. Why, yes, we do. The new chef loves to make twice-baked potatoes. So that's what we had, and it was very memorable, but their steaks are really fantastic. And so We've been eating there probably for 40 years, ever since it was brand new and was owned by the family that built this house that I am now trying to sell. So I have a long association with it. But we went there with a bunch of friends, our typical New Year's Eve crowd, back in, I want to say 1979-ish. Maybe it was 81-ish, but it was right in there. And the service was so bad. And the food, when we got it, was so late and so lackluster that we had a pact, all of us in our New Year's Eve group, pledged to each other that we would never go through the doors of that establishment ever again. And we lived up to that for probably 15 years. And nobody in our group violated that pact until, I want to say it was early 90s. We had and I lived out in the country. I had 6 acres in the woods, and we had an ice storm that brought down power lines all over the area, so we had no power. But we had a fireplace, and I threw wood into that fireplace 24/7, and it was a total of 2 days. I didn't know it was going to last another a third day, but Mary came home from work, and she said, "My God, it's cold and miserable in here." And I said, "Well, I know where the largest fireplace in town is, but we promised our friends we're not going to go there." And she said, "Well, we could go there and lie to them." And I said, "Excellent. Let's lie to our friends. And I'm good with that." So we went over to this steakhouse, this magnificent place. It's built like a big barn with big high ceilings and beams and stuff. And I said, "Let's, you know, we want a table right next to the fireplace." They had a huge fireplace. And so we found out that night that it had changed hands and that the food quality had improved substantially. And that's when I discovered these wonderful twice-baked potatoes. So it was, you know, coming up on 30 years ago that we found that this restaurant was like a mecca. And I think what happened with the twice-baked potatoes was they lost a chef that specialized in them and got another chef. But their steaks are still fantastically good. So that's the short story. I could make it longer, but that's the short story about St. Charles Place Steakhouse.
Well, now I'm getting hungry, Doug. Darn it. Oh,
if you ever had one of their primo meals, then you would be thinking about it for a couple of days and trying to figure out an excuse. I had a guy do a favor for me. It involved a dead, rotting deer, but I'm not going to go any farther than that. And I said, "How much can I pay you?" And he basically said, "Buy me lunch." And I said, "I'll do better than that. I'll buy you a dinner at St. Charles Place." And he said, "Really? Wow. I didn't work that hard." And I said, "That's all right. I need an excuse to go there."
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was really you that wanted to go there, right?
Well, now that I've had enough meals there, I'm always looking for excuses. And even though it's prohibitively expensive, it's like jonesing. And it's ironic that I would be jonesing for anything, but it's the kind of thing that I want to go back and experience from time to time.
Well, I'm glad you have some sources for good steaks out there because, as you know, being from Nebraska, we consider ourselves to be the top of the steak heap in the United States.
Yeah, and I'll tell you about moving from Illinois to Arizona in the 70s. I was so disappointed to find out that Arizona steak was nowhere near the quality that we were getting from Nebraska, from the feedlots in Nebraska delivered to the big city of Chicago. Arizona steak, it was all homegrown, and it was cows that were, you know, muscular and sinewy. And
yeah, well, I would describe it even worse than that, Doug. These were cows off the prairie that had been jogging across the desert for at least a couple of years.
And if they were hungry, they ate sticks.
Yeah, sticks and acorns and rattlesnakes.
Yeah. So, frankly, I've always been disappointed with the quality of the steaks in Arizona. And it's, you know, Nebraska and their product, which makes it to Illinois, that's my go-to, my golden standard for steaks.
I went to to this day, I don't remember what restaurant it was, but when I first moved out to Arizona, I took Margaret and we went to some, you know, clear at the top of the heap restaurant, you know, best steaks in the world, yeah. You know, that kind of thing. And I get in there and I'm looking at the menu and where does the beef come from? Omaha Steaks.
There you go. Now, Omaha Steaks, I've been disappointed with.
The first one. they really are okay. I like Omaha steaks, and they're great, but they're kind of the Kmart of steaks
for Omaha. Yeah, yeah. You have to get the good product. You've got to go sit in the restaurant and pay a ton of money. Omaha Steaks is nice, convenient. They'll send them to your house. They're not hugely expensive. Theoretically, you're getting their product. I don't think you're getting their best product, though.
No. The other, if you're ever in Omaha, now you travel quite a bit. If you're ever in Omaha, mark this down. Go to Prime 140. Best restaurant, best beef in Omaha.
Here's where my categorization skills come in. I don't have to remember Prime 140. I only have to remember you.
Yes.
Because when I'm headed to Omaha, I'm going to be calling you saying, where was that place you told me to go?
That's right. Now, I'll give you one short description of why you want to go to Prime 140. This restaurant is so exclusive with their meat that they actually have two farms over in Iowa that produce for them exclusively to their specification.
That's a beautiful thing. I wish more restaurants did. I just had a heartbreaking experience. I was going to arrange with somebody to go eat downtown Chicago at a place called Lowry's Prime Rib. And the riots in Chicago caused us to delay our plans to do that. And just, you know, let's put it off for a couple of months, see if things settle down. And all of a sudden, the announcement came from the owner of the chain or that steakhouse, which was the home, the mothership of the chain of Lowry's, the Prime Rib, that they were closing their doors. And I'm heartbroken. The other place in Chicago that I would go would be Chicago Chop House. They have excellent prime rib.
Oh, yeah. I even heard of that.
Yeah, it is fantastic. And on a couple of days a week, they'll have a prime rib that's coated with their special fixins. And, man, the first time I had that, I had no idea that was a day. And it was the best. My mouth is watering now, and I can't even remember what it tastes like. So pardon me while I drool on myself.
So the first time you had one of those, you weren't sure, but you thought you'd died and gone to heaven?
I was on a business meeting, and I had to entertain out-of-towners. And I said, well, let's go to this place here because I think you'll enjoy it. It's a pretty good experience. And, you know, these guys are rolling on the floor going, oh, my God, what is this? How come we can't have this place? And it was news to me. I'd never been there before. I was probably 45 years old and thought, well, got these guests, spent some money on them, and it was a big hit. I was queen for a day.
Yes, yes.
So are we at the 20-minute mark? Is it about time to wrap it up?
We've got 7 minutes that we could fill with anything that you would like to speak to.
Well, typically that would be some sort of Medicare-related stuff. So, frankly, it's been desk cleaning day around here, just in case we get an offer that we can't refuse for the house. And so I heard a podcast. I'd love to listen to Medicare-related podcasts. And so I listened to a podcast done by a girl that Randy has laughed at before. And she has told other insurance agents how to prepare for the annual election period, which starts October 15th and runs to Pearl Harbor Day. And it was it involved a lot of things like make sure you have the proper forms ready for all your potential customers to fill out and everything, and don't forget to polish your nails and take a bubble bath. Randy and I are laughing heartily at her advice. And so here we are in almost at the end of September, and this woman is still flogging the China virus panic. I don't call it a pandemic because a pandemic is something, if you look it up in the dictionary, it affects almost everybody. And I don't know anybody that's even had this stuff. And if I do, they've been asymptomatic. So I call it a panic. But so she had a whole podcast about rules for dealing with people during the annual election period. Now, this thing, in case you haven't listened to my other podcast, annual election period is a time when the Medicare Advantage salesmen go completely berserk. And they can't wait to get out there and sign people up. And there are a lot of people who change plans. So there are plenty of people for these guys to talk to. And they get new commissions. They love to sell this product because it has a lot of commissions built in to reward the agent. So my advice is never to buy a Medicare Advantage plan, always buy a Medicare supplement plan, which has very small commissions. So anyway, the annual election period is just like a feeding frenzy for the piranha of the Medicare world, the Medicare agent. And so this woman goes through this whole list of rules of dealing with clients in an era where we have a pandemic of COVID-19 virus. And she says, okay, now for individual face-to-face meetings with potential clients, let's say that you're meeting them at a booth or a retail store. The first rule of thumb is do not check their temperatures. That could be considered a health screening. So Randy's going, well, my God, you know, they've invented.
Okay. You know how my mind works.
I know, and I think it should stop working like that. This is a family podcast.
Oh, my God. There's a couple, three ways to check your temperature, and it depends on which one you're after there.
Using an IR gun is probably the way that is most highly recommended. But the federal government has a big deal about insurance agents who might try to steer unhealthy customers away from their products. And I swear to God, I've never understood that, because an insurance agent is only doing one thing. They're only collecting commission. That's the only reason they're on the planet. Sharks are only on the planet to swim and eat. And insurance agents are only on the planet to do what sharks do, which is basically involves commission. So an insurance agent is never going to turn away a person just because they're sick. They'll never turn away somebody on their deathbed. If they can put a pen in that person's hand, and if they're unconscious, the insurance agent will write their signature on the application for them or somehow cause them to become a client, because there is not an insurance agent in the world who would turn down a prospective client sale because they were not healthy. But somehow the stupid CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, they can't even spell their name right. It should be CMMS. But they have decided that insurance agents are likely to perform health tests or health screenings on potential clients so that they, yeah, temperatures included, Randy. Boy, yeah, we're back in second grade here. I'm trying to keep it a little elevated. But anyway, so the federal government says don't do that because you could be accused of screening out some people who are not healthy. Well, there is not an insurance agent in the world that is going to turn down a sale just because the client isn't healthy. So that's completely insane, but that shows how your federal regulators think. And by that, I mean how they don't think. They're a bunch of morons. So anyway, here are the things you should do when you're in a booth or a retail store trying to snag victims for your Medicare Advantage sales activity. First of all, practice good hand hygiene. Wear masks. Ask your client to wear a mask and then put a plexiglass shield in between you. That's like wearing a belt and suspenders and a belt, as far as I'm concerned. And then also maintain social distancing. So there's another pair of suspenders for you. Don't pass papers back and forth. Okay. Meet in an office or an RV instead of in your house or their house.
Oh, in an RV. Oh, there we go.
And, you know, I thought that was pretty ridiculous until I realized my daughter and her husband, who is an executive at a large international company that sells computer chips, they rented an RV with another couple. Actually, they rented two RVs and drove around the Southwest. And they loved it so much, they decided to buy an Airstream trailer.
Yeah.
And so they were going to buy an old one and have it rehabbed until I showed them an article I've got that says it was the worst experience of the guy's life. He'd never, ever rehab another trailer. So they decided to buy a new one, have it outfitted the way they like it, park it in the yard, and that is going to be his office. So they're gaining another guest bedroom in their house because the husband will be using that Airstream trailer as his office. So this suggestion was not as ridiculous as I had thought. So anyway, it says meet in an office or RV. Let the client handle doors and chairs in the client's own house. Don't touch anything. If you have symptoms of the China flu, do not go to the appointment. Well, that's ridiculous. How moronic do they think we are? If I have symptoms of anything, I'm going to be laying in bed demanding that my wife bring me beverages and food in bed until I recover. I will not go anyplace if I have symptoms. So I don't know why people have to be told that.
Do these people think that we're totally out of touch with reality?
Either that, or they're having as much trouble coming up with podcast content as I might be. So I listen to them and I get good ideas.
So, I'm just envisioning going, okay, we've got an appointment next week for you to review your Medicare disadvantage plan with me. And mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, meet me downtown in a blue trailer parked on the corner. Okay, there's 17 things wrong with that.
Is that the same trailer you go trolling for kids in with the the ice cream man ding dong
right.
song?
Yeah, there's actually a trip door. There's actually a window on the side of it where you sell ice cream through too.
Sure, and you know something? I would think that would be really sick and funny if my brother hadn't decided that he wanted to do that during one summer in college. So he and his buddy bought an old van, had somebody paint it with clown stuff on it. I swear to God, they'd be arrested for doing that nowadays, but they went around and sold ice cream all summer. And then my brother went back to college. His buddy used the name to start a restaurant, and that restaurant was a huge success. And then he abused his liver once too often and died at about age 35. So that'll teach you. Success should come with a modicum of self-control. Don't enjoy every dollar that you make. Pack some of it away for the future. So anyway, I wanted to list the 12 things this woman suggested for dealing with clients face-to-face in this day of pandemic and panic. Number one, practice good hand hygiene. As a boy coming from a ranch in Nebraska, I'm guessing that you would wash your hands occasionally, right?
It was usually a quarterly thing.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you know, we would put gloves on, and bottom line is, if you're out, 5 miles away from the ranch, you're not going to worry about that kind of stuff.
I have to guess here, and I'm going to speculate. The difference between you and me and the mask-wearing weenies out there is that we have an immune system.
Well, yes. And, they may have forgotten what an immune system is, but it's one of those things that, you actually grow up with as a child, and it gets stronger because of the things and the bacteria and so forth that your body faces. And the kids nowadays that are wrapped in plastic and delivered to school, they don't have one of those.
Well, maybe if they got them, we wouldn't have to panic about all this stupidity that other people. I think we've had 6,000 people in the United States over the last 6 or 8 months that have died of this disease that didn't have mitigating circumstances. So I say all the people that are potentially at risk should be locked up. And the rest of us should be left alone to live our lives as we have been doing. So anyway, number two, wear a mask, this woman says. You must wear a mask. She sounded like Gladys Kravitz when she said it. Stay 6 feet away from your client. Request that the client wear a mask. Place a piece of plexiglass between you and the client.
How are you going to do this in their house?
I don't know.
You walk into their house with a piece of plexiglass?
Oh, no, I got to go back. I couldn't carry all my papers.
I couldn't bring all my stuff. And plus, I can't get within 6 feet of you. So you stand back, I'm going to load your house up with plexiglass.
You open the door for me so I don't have to touch your doorknob. complete applications online if possible. Don't shake hands. And she said, if your client wants to shake hands with you, say, I'm sorry, I am not allowed to shake hands right now. Don't perform temperature checks without their consent. Once again, Randy's going, oh my God.
God's sakes. If I had somebody pop out with an infrared temperature thingy
pointing at
in
your
my
head,
house,
because they look like
and
pistols,
pointed at my face, guess what would happen next? It wouldn't be a pretty sight.
Well, you'd be in your quick draw mode, and you'd be,
That's
I'm
right.
Drop him before they drop me.
That's right. That you better hope that that's bigger than mine.
Oh boy, yeah, because they do like look like little pistols. Okay, don't ask questions about the client's health without their consent. Don't go to in-person appointments if you have any symptoms. And if you've been around anybody or tested positive that had symptoms, until you've self-quarantined for 14 days. Well, there's no agent in the world that sells Medicare Advantage plans that's going to hide in the house during annual election period for 14 days. That's just not in their modus operandi. That's not in their gene pool. Do not invade a client's personal space. I wasn't sure I believed it myself. I had to look.
What do we mean by invading our personal space?
I'm thinking that that means do not get closer than 6 feet. It used to be don't, you know, touch them, but now it means stay more than 6 feet away from them, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what any of this means. This is so ridiculous. I'm only doing this because I'm in desk clearing mode and I want to throw this piece of paper away.
Well, and it's important because we are, we're nearing in on the annual, what is it?
Election period.
The annual election period. And, you know, we have to train up all these Medicare disadvantaged people not to, you know, jump on top of your desk and slam a, you know, temperature thing at you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But apparently they forget from one year to the next. Don't do that. Be civilized. Because all they do is they work that 2 months at the end of the year and then they go hide under a rock. So, and the final rule here, don't touch doorknobs, chairs, or other items in the client's home.
How are you supposed to sit down?
Apparently, you don't. Just stand there at attention.
Just stand up, you know, like in the corner, 6 feet away.
I'll tell you, though, this woman did finally redeem herself at the end because she did have a nod toward those of us who don't believe in any of this garbage, who are not afraid of these germs. And she did say it's a rational thing whether you are afraid or whether you are against restrictions. So she at least admits that there are people like us who are not panicked by this and who think that the whole thing is a blown up piece of garbage. So I don't know. Now, I've got other items here that I want to get off my desk and throw away, but I have this feeling that you're going to tell me that we're running out of time. Am I correct about that or not?
Your feeling would be entirely accurate, Mr. Jones. We have run out of steam, as you like to say.
Well, our next recording session, buckle up, because I'm going to be plowing through some real stupid stuff and some factually valuable information also.
So, when you say buckle up, a friend of mine has an expression, buckle up, buttercup. Is that something that's a typical expression or something my friend just dreamt up?
I'm thinking that's something your friend dreamt up back when he was a young man. And the local girls were being warned away from him. That would be my speculation there. When I say buckle up to you, what I'm telling you is that I'm going to get down to business and I'm going to get after it. And I'm going to be businesslike and I'm going to feed our listeners with good Medicare information from the first moment of the podcast recording until it ends. Now, that's never happened yet, but, you know, it's my goal for you to buckle up and for me to start yakking and not shut up until the end of the episode.
There you go. Well, you know, at this point in time, given we have run out of steam, let's thank our audience for joining us. We really appreciate it. We absolutely thank every one of you and look forward to talking to every one of you over these podcasts, and we look forward to seeing you again next time. But for today, we better sign off because you have just spent the last 32 and a half minutes listening to Doug Jones, the sole proprietor of MedicareForTheLazyMan.com from Oklahoma, the Oklahoma kid, and the anti-insurance guy.
That list gets longer and longer.
I know. I love it.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.